Okay, so there's our review. And for those listening, sorry you didn't get a review. Okay, so as we start tonight, we're going to talk about the church's structure. And for Joe's sake here, we're going through doctrine, Bible doctrine, and so we're into the section dealing with the church. And I guess Shar hasn't been here either, so for both of you on that day. So tonight we're going to look at the structure of the church, you know, about the members, officers, government, and that kind of thing in the local church. All right, so church members, the meaning of ecclesia expects membership. All right, remember the word ecclesia is the word translated church in the Bible. It actually refers to an assembly. And the New Testament ecclesia does not include all believers everywhere, but only those that are called out to a particular assembly. All right, so our assembly is gathered right here tonight, whereas other churches are gathered other places in their assemblies. So they are their individual local churches. Now, the New Testament ecclesia was made up of believers who were baptized or immersed under water after salvation and added to the congregation. Acts 2:41. And they that gladly received the word were baptized, and the same day were added unto them about 3,000 souls. You know, I've often tried to picture in my mind that day on when that happened. I mean, can you imagine 3,000 people getting saved and they were baptized? And you know, that was an all-day event. You can be sure of that. It was a big event for them. But then, as we continue on, it is true that church membership is not specifically commanded in the Bible. And some people say, well, you know, it's not commanded in the Bible, so we don't have to be church members. Well, when you stop and look at that, though, it is implied, and it is actually necessary for church discipline to work. And let me explain here. Matthew chapter 18, verse 17, this is when Jesus was telling his disciples in preparation for the church, telling them how to deal with church discipline. And he says there, and if he shall neglect to hear them, speaking of a person who has made some conflicts and had some issues, and if he neglects to hear them, tell it unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. So he says, if a person has done wrong, and you're supposed to go see him one-on-one and say, brother, what you did wasn't right. You know that. You need to get it right. No, I don't want to leave me alone. Then it says, take two or three others with you. So you take one or two others with you. So there's two or three people that goes and sees him the second time and says, you know, brother, what you did wasn't right. You need to get it right. No, I'm not going to get it right. You need to just leave me alone. All right. Then it says you take it to the church, and the church confronts him and says, all right, now listen, brother, this isn't right, and you can't ignore that. You've got to get it right. And if he says, I'm not going to change, I'm not going to get it right, then it says you need to treat him like a heathen man or a publican. Right now, how do we treat heathens and publicans? Most of us have heathen and publican neighbors. Publicans were the tax collectors. The heathens were just the unbelievers. And, you know, so you don't treat your unbelieving neighbors harshly or unkindly. You just don't have real close fellowship with them anymore. And so he says the person that won't listen and won't get right, you can't have close fellowship with them anymore. Right? And it's impossible for church discipline, you know, for a church to discipline someone who's not a church member. How do you discipline somebody that's not a member? If he just happens to come once in a while and you say, you got to get right, and he says, you know, I don't care. Do what you want. I'm not going to listen to you. You can't do anything. There's no repercussion. All right. There has to be membership if there's going to be a repercussion against the person that has done wrong. All right. So that's a good argument for church membership. Biblical requirements for membership would include a clear testimony of one's faith in Christ. They're in Acts 2:41. And then a biblical baptism by immersion after salvation. Again, in the same verse, and then harmony with the church's doctrine or practice. And a lot of this stuff I actually touched on Sunday, and it was had nothing to do with the lesson tonight, but we did touch on some of these things. So harmony is compatibility, not necessarily identical thinking. All right, you know, I've been members of churches that I couldn't say that I agreed with absolutely every single thing that the preacher did. That's all right. I put up with it, and I didn't make a fuss, and I didn't make a problem with it, because it wasn't a big thing. Now, if it was a major thing, yes, you've got to say, hang on now, I can't handle this, because they, you know, if the church is teaching, let's say, something really radical, maybe they're teaching baby baptism, and I say, no, there's no way I'm going to put up with that and just ignore that. That's major, that's not minor. but little minor things need to be just overlooked if they're not significant. And so that's all part of being part of any kind of a group, really. Whether it's a church or something else, you know, we're not going to agree with everything that takes place. As far as the church officers, the Bible only mentions two officers, the pastor and the deacon, and maybe an evangelist. All right? It does mention evangelists. Often they're not included in the officers of a church, though. Now, this does not forbid the election of lower officers, like the clerk and the treasurer, etc., but it does forbid electing higher officers. All right? So our church is not going to vote on and hire a bishop or a you know, cardinal or something of some other kind of a name, because that's those higher officers, and that's not what's in the Bible. All right, and then the pastor as the office, the Bible calls the church leader, the pastor, by several titles. He's called a pastor, he's called a teacher, there in Ephesians 4. He's called a bishop, an overseer in 1 Timothy 3, and he's called an elder in 1 Peter 5. All right, so all of these refer to the same man, different titles for the same man. Right, and there's some other verses there you can compare with it as well, as it's used throughout the Bible. And so, good for us to see that it's, you know, when one verse talks about an elder and another verse talks about the bishop, well, it's still talking about the preacher. It's the pastor of the church. All right? The pastor's qualifications, you can read up on them. We're not going to delve into that tonight. But then the ordaining or choosing of a pastor. How is a church supposed to choose their pastor? Well, by church vote of a stretched out hand. All right? Acts chapter 14. Take a look at that verse. I want you to take a look at that verse there in Acts 14. It's an important verse for us to notice here because this is a subject that is quite significant. Acts chapter 14 and verse number 23. Acts 14 and verse number 23. All right. Acts 14:23 says, "And when they had ordained elders in every church and had prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord on whom they believed." All right, so when it says they are ordained elders in every church, the idea here is not that Paul was forcing them to do what he wanted them to do. It actually refers to a raise of a hand. If you look up the original words there, it refers to a raise of a hand. The congregation was voting regarding who they were choosing there. So you can look up the individual words on that, and you'll see that what I'm telling you is true. With the missionary guidance, that does not rule out the church vote. All right, so Paul told Titus there, in Titus chapter 1, that he was to guide the church in their choosing of the pastors, and yet though he was guiding them and encouraging and leading them doesn't rule out the fact that they were still voting on it. It wasn't that the apostles weren't coming in there and say, all right, now you and you are going to be the pastors of the church here and you're going to take over. No, the church had their vote on that. Okay, does that make sense? All right. Then as we move on, pastors' duties include shepherding and willing overseeing and being an example, not a dictator. Peter comes out real clearly on this in 1 Peter chapter 5, and he addresses that duty of pastors. He says in verse number 2 of 1 Peter 5, "Feed the flock of God which is among you." And the word "feed" there refers to shepherding, or providing food for them like a shepherd would for a sheep. "Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly. Not for filthy lucre," in other words, don't do it just for the money of it, "but of a ready mind," because that's what you believe God wants you to do. "Neither as being lords over God's heritage," right? So he says the pastor is not to be the lord over them and saying, "I'm the boss here and you bow to me," but being an example to the flock. Right? So he's supposed to lead by example, not as a dictator. Right? So this is the responsibility of the pastor. The title pastor is a respectful biblical term. It is not a lording type of a title or of superiority. I know some people don't like calling me the pastor. They just call me by my name, and that's all right. I'm not against that, but I do think that there is a respectful sense of calling a person by the pastor. I mean, even if my pastor was 20 years younger than me, I'd still call him pastor. Because that's his position, and it gives him respect for his position. But that, you know, I try not to make an issue of it, but I do think that it is something that is a good idea. The congregation is to support and honor their pastor. A faithful pastor deserves honor and pay. And Paul addresses this to Timothy there. He talks about giving them the portion that they need and a double honor to the preacher for their responsibilities. So in our church situation, I'm very grateful that the church here pays for our utilities. At this point, the church doesn't pay any of our wages. We're still getting that as missionaries from America. And but the day's coming that you're going to need to provide for your own pastor. And that's one of the things we're working toward. And so you can be praying. And I beg you to make that a regular prayer point. That the Lord would just provide. I mean, I am 64, and I can't continue on forever. All right, and neither Melody and I are in the greatest of health, and you know that. And then also my parents are failing in America, and, you know, I'm the eldest in the family. I have responsibilities, and I honestly don't know what to do. And I talked to my sister about it in an email yesterday about that, because it is a hard thing. What do you do? I don't know the answer to that. So do pray that God would raise up somebody to take over the church and be the pastor of the church that I could just work with and mentor and help him and guide him in that. I don't want to see this church fall. I don't want to see it collapse. And over the years, I've seen too many churches that have been started here in Perth, and they don't exist anymore. They're gone because they didn't have leadership that was strong enough to keep them together. And so I don't want that to happen. Now, we look at the second officers, the deacon. The word refers to a servant or a minister or a waiter. This is the person who is the deacon. The office probably began in Acts chapter 6. That was when they chose out seven men who were filled with the Holy Spirit to help with the responsibilities. Remember, the apostles said, we are busy. And there were people complaining that some of the widows weren't getting taken care of properly. And the apostles said, we're trying to study the word and pray. We don't have time to be running around and helping all these needy widows. And they weren't belittling the widows. That was a good need. There was a need there. So they said, all right, let's just choose out seven men of honest report who can go and minister to them in a physical way. So the congregation chose them. Probably were actually deacons, although in that passage it doesn't call them that. Deacons were chosen when needed and when qualified. You know, the Bible doesn't say you have to have deacons in your church, and I'm grateful for the deacon we have. And speaking of the deacon, just one thing I wanted to mention is that one of the things that I've asked Brother Lapis to do for me is to kind of organize church activities. So if you have any of those kind of ideas, throw them his way, all right? And he can be a help to us in that way in finding some church activities for us. But the deacons are there to take care of the manual type things, to let the preacher do more of his work that of his studying and things of that nature. Their qualifications, again, they're in Timothy. You can read them. We're not delving into that tonight. All right, so as the deacons, their duties were to care for the secular matters so the pastor could spend more time with the spiritual matters. Very important, very helpful, and a very good thing for them to do. Their work was more manual, and the pastor's was more mental. They never formed a board, nor did they govern. You know, some churches have deacon's board, where basically, I mean, I grew up in a church that was a deacon-run church. The preacher was just there to preach, and the deacons ran the church. And they made all the decisions, made all of the, you know, all of those kind of decisions. And, you know, I don't believe that that's the biblical pattern that you find in the scriptures, because the deacons weren't in that kind of a position. They were there to help with the manual things so that the preacher could do his preaching and his studying. And so the Bible never says that they were ever to be the pastors, even as advisors or counselors. And I get counsel from my deacon, but that's not what the Bible says that their job actually was. Their job was to take care of serving tables and meeting the needs of the widows and caring for the people and the manual type of things, so the preacher could spend his time in the in his study and his spiritual things. All right. Now, unbiblical forms of church government. You know, just a quick look at this. Autocratic, it's a hierarchical structure ruled by pope and cardinals and bishops. That's the Catholic Church for you. The Episcopal, governed by bishops of the denomination. Right, so this is another form. Then the Presbyterian is governed by presbyters through synods and general assemblies of their denomination. Now, all three of these are very common today. None of them are what you see in the scriptures. They do not follow the pattern of the local church autonomy that we've been studying and looking at that we find here in the scriptures. Yes, ma'am. Which one?
Synod.
Oh, through synods? A synod is a governing body of some sort. Anybody have a better answer than that? All right, it's the governing body of the church, a synod. It's a group of people that were governing and leading in the general assemblies of the denomination. So there was groups within the Presbyterians churches that they've got presbyters that were certain leaders, and then there's the synods that were groups of leaders, and then the general assemblies were other groups of leaders. All right, so okay. All right, church government polity. All right, the biblical form of church government. Every local church, once they were able, is to be autonomous or self-governing and self-supporting. All right. And our church is getting near to that place. We need more solid membership, but our income is pretty stable, and the things are pretty good in that regard. But we really need to be able to have more of the government, the human government part of it. Right? In each biblical church, Jesus Christ is the head. And there's verses there in Ephesians and Colossians that deal with that. And the Holy Spirit is the administrator, and the congregation biblically governs. All right, so these churches do not form an organized denomination. Right, we're not a denomination. People might say, well, we're the Baptist denomination. Well, we're not really a denomination. A denomination is a group that all meets together, and they have meetings, and you got to follow their rules, and you do that. We're an independent Baptist church. Now, the Baptist Union would probably fit more into a denomination rather than. But the independent Baptists, we're not under a denomination like that. There's no other church. We don't have to check with anybody before we make decisions when we have our meetings. You know, but at the same time, you know, when we go to buy something, you know, say we wanted to buy property. Well, it's our problem. It's our problem. We can't write to somebody and say, hey, we need some money to buy some property. No, that's our job. Because we're independent, we're on our own in that area. Every member has an equal vote, and a majority decides. All right, their decisions are final. So it's the congregation that votes, and decisions aren't made by higher governing bodies. And each congregation calls its own pastor. And that's an important thing, too. You know, in some denominations, the hierarchy says, all right, this guy's coming over to be your pastor. And they say, well, what if we don't like him? Well, that's too bad. He's going to be your pastor. You know, and that's not what they did in the Bible, and I don't think that that's the right thing for us to do either. Okay?
Yeah, they come out of Bible colleges like that. We're pre-programmed to go. The Baptist is
So each church may send or support missionaries of their own choosing, and that's a blessing. We've got our four missionaries that we've chosen to support and to send on their way, and so we can be praying for them. But we choose that. We don't have to check with somebody else and say, is it okay we get this missionary? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was having a question from before.
Yep.
I'm just curious. I didn't actually know. So the members of the church say if they're going to vote on something, right? And the majority of the vote gets the vote. But who, in certain situations, makes the final decision? Is the pastor in that situation? Because you were saying the pastor is more important than the deacons, but they're all members at the same time.
Well, the pastor leads the congregation. But like, even in our congregation, let's say we were going to buy a building, all right? We would have a meeting, and our constitution has guidelines on the type of a decision we make. Some decisions require a higher percentage of the vote. Others, general decisions, are just a bit over a majority, I believe, is what it is, for general decisions. You know, should we buy, you know, some toys for the nursery, you know, something like that. But major decisions, especially like calling a pastor, I think it's a three-quarters vote, if I remember right. But there's things of that nature. Generally?
Well, it's more like actual government in the sense that even though most countries have a main leader that makes executive decisions, seldom can that leader actually just directly make a decision. It's generally never the case. It has to go through courts and legislators as well. It's not like, I mean, it's very rare, unless you live in like the dictatorship, where the supreme leader can say, well, this is the final decision.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess back to answer your question there, Garrett, there's some things that the church has given me their permission to make decisions on. For instance, I can, if I wanted to have an evangelist come in and preach a series of meetings, I don't have to hold a meeting and say, all right, folks, can we have this evangelist come? The church has already given me that authority to do that. Now, evangelists are thin as, you know, few as... You just can't find them, so we don't do that very often. But I have the church's authority to do that. All right. So some pastors would be more authoritative than others, just by their nature. And as long as they're governing in a proper way, that can work fine. But when they start doing things that are pushing the limits and upsetting people, then that's when they get friction, all right? And so I try to do everything, you know, that's any kind of a significant decision, I try to bring that before the church and let you guys decide rather than me make that decision.
So, when you say before the church, who is your church?
The American
church decides what you do here?
No.
Do they pay anything for you?
No.
Or tell you what to do
no.
here?
No. No, it's our congregation right here. All right, those who are actual members of our congregation here are the ones that make do the voting. And so I don't have to contact anybody over in America. The Americans that support me for my wages only. We've got a mission board. Melody and I are with Baptist World Mission in America, and there's some regulations and guidelines that they insist on, some things that we have to abide by. But in our conduct and the way that we do things, but nothing regarding our church. I never have to contact them and say, you know, our church wants to buy a new vehicle. You know, is that okay with you guys? No, it has nothing to do with them. All of the decisions that our local congregation makes is our congregation. Yes, ma'am.
Say if the congregation got bigger, maybe that is something that you have elders.
Well, elders is another term for the pastor. The elder and bishop those are other terms for a pastor. Some churches do use what they call multiple elders in the congregation, but they're actually pastors. Whereas, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, some denominations may have different terms for them other than that. Often deacons, you know, I mean, if our church had 300 people coming, then I'd probably have 8 or 10 deacons. And so then we'd have deacons meetings once a month or whatever, and we'd discuss some of the big things that are coming up. And again, the scriptures do not say that the deacons are in positions of leadership as far as decision making, but most pastors that I know of rely upon their deacons for counsel so that they can get insight from them in that way. So that's the biggest thing. We would have many more deacons, and then a church of 300 very likely have an assistant pastor. So there's other people involved as well. So, yeah, the bigger you get, the more people you get under them. But ultimately, the pastor has to make the final decision. And back to Garrett's question there, you know, if there was a situation that came up and even if the church said, no, Pastor, we don't want you to do that. But deep down in my heart, I felt like it was compromising us if we didn't do it. Like, for example, maybe the congregation wanted to change. I'll just say something crazy. All right, the congregation wanted to change our doctrinal position to baby baptism. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. And the whole congregation said, Pastor, we want that to be done. And there was a lock, and I'd say, all right, listen, I'm the pastor. We're going to do what the Bible says. I'm not backing down. And if they continue to insist, then I have no choice but to leave. And that's not what I want. But I would not back down on something I felt very strongly about. Okay.
But why did you leave and not them?
I'm outnumbered. Well, what I'm saying is, if I say, all right, you guys go, leave, I'm staying here, and it's just me, that doesn't do anything either. So I'm better off trying. I mean, my goal would not be to blow the church apart. My goal was, I love these people. I don't want to see them destroyed. I don't want to see the congregation messed up. I prefer leaving as peacefully as I could under the circumstances. And I'm using wild examples here, but hopefully that kind of answers that question. Okay? All right. Almost finished here. Let me buzz on a little bit more. All right. All cases of church discipline are settled by the congregation. All right. We saw that in Matthew 18. Each church is autonomous. It has no right to control another congregation, and no other congregation may control it. And each church is self-supporting. They do not depend on the funds of another of the denomination for purchases or payments of their pastor. A lot of church denominations would pay the pastor, or they pay for buildings, or pay. You know, you look around here at some of the big buildings, you know, of some of the denominational groups that are around us. Well, that little congregation that meets on Sunday morning that has about 60 or 80 people, they didn't put up that multi-million dollar edifice that they got. They've gotten help either from the government or from their denomination to be able to build those kind of buildings. They certainly didn't do it out of their little handful of congregation that they had. So, you know, it takes time, but, you know, and there's problems with that. See, all right, well, let me just throw that out to you. What would be the biggest problem of us saying, you know, let's just see if the government won't give us a $1 million to add with our savings to be able to buy a nice building? What's the?
It comes with ties.
That's right. It comes with ties. All right. And you do this. Oh, we gave you that. Now you got to do it this way. You got to do it our way. And then you get yourself in all kinds of problems, because then you got them breathing down your back and for the rest of your existence, because you can't get out from under it. Now they've already given you the money. How do you get out from under it? And that is a major problem. Major problem. And a lot of them have done that, and you can't get out. Any church affiliation with the Baptist Association or fellowships is voluntary. All right, so there's different Baptist associations or Baptist fellowships. I have no problem with that. But there's no ties to that. They don't call up the church and say, come on, you're late on your dues. Come on, pay your dues. No, they don't do that, because it's all voluntary, and there's no dues to be paid. It's just we meet together to get some fellowship, and there are some like that around, but unfortunately, most of it's on the other side of the country. Okay? Then, what church membership... Okay, so this review here. What church membership qualifications are found in Acts 2:41? Acts 2:41. Anybody remember? Stretching your
Mel? Believe and be baptized.
Okay, so it was believe and be baptized. All right, so believe and be baptized were there in Acts 2:41. In what passage in Matthew did Jesus instruct the church on discipline? What's the chapter? No, it's one of the teens. 18. Okay, all right. 18:15-17. Okay, and then what church officers are listed in the Bible? Monica. Pastor and deacon. Very good. And possibly evangelist, but he's not usually considered a church officer. What biblical duties did the deacons have? What did the Bible describe as their duties? Okay, serving. That'd be a good way of putting it. Caring for the secular matters there. Serving and meeting those needs in a secular way, rather as opposed to the spiritual things. What word best describes the biblical church government? Maybe that's not a very good question here. The answer was autonomous. That's probably not a very worded right. But anyway, that's what I was after. Okay, last question here. Why would it be wrong to soften our biblical stand in order to increase our membership? Maybe this is on a little bit of a different slant than what we've been focusing our thoughts on.
Well, see, we don't change the doctrine, like the biblical principles that's
yes. For us. We need to stand strong and do what's right, even if it doesn't bring in lots of people. And, you know, that's the thing that we're seeing happen all over the world. And I shared some of this with you on Sunday night a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, churches that are just growing huge because they have dropped their standards, they've dropped their doctrines, they've opened up their music, and they turn on their drums, and they bring in a rock band, and they put on the light displays, and then they bring in lots of people. But unfortunately, you bring in people that don't want to hear the truth. They just want to be entertained. And so, is there any other thoughts on this? Softening our doctrine to be able to build up our membership. Garrett?
Well, it kind of looks bad on us as well, for ourselves, because what do we stand for? Like, are we just having a church for more people, or are we having a church because we actually want to do what God said and wants us to say?
Yeah. See, the bottom line is that each of us in our hearts, we need to say, I know what I believe, and I'm going to follow what I believe. I'm going to stand for what I believe. I'm not going to change what I believe. I'm going to do what's right. And, you know, there's times when we're genuinely convicted that we have made a wrong choice, and we can say, all right, I can see a need for a change there. Right? And so we genuinely make a change in that way. But overall, we need to stand strong and say, you know, we need to stand on what is right and not be moving with the waves of the sea. Okay?
I totally agree with that. But say somebody comes up to you and he says, say, he believes in the gospel, but he doesn't necessarily believe in some of the other areas which are not to do with salvation. What does that mean?
Well, it depends on what he's after. I mean, if he wants to join a church, then I would say, what I always do is I have people go through a little Bible study with me. It gives me 6 lessons that I can go through, and we can talk about a lot of these things. And if they're very adamantly strong and say, you know, no, I believe strongly on this, well, I might have to say, well, you know, we don't believe that. And so you're probably never going to be happy here. You probably ought to find a church that thinks like you do. Because you're never going to be happy here, because I'm not changing my thinking on that. And, and that has happened over the years, you know, where people, probably more than anything else, is the issue of Calvinism.
I just meant concerning salvation. Yeah. That doesn't mean that
person... No. It has nothing to do with his salvation. It just has everything to do with, you know, whether he's going to be happy in our congregation.
I understand.
Okay? Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
So...